You're listening to Freethinker Radio on 90.1 KPFT Houston, your home for uncensored news and underground music since 2011.
All right, December 22nd, 2021, winding down. Freethinker Radio, Friday.
Welcome to Freethinker Radio, guys. What's up, man? Happy early Merry Christmas, whatever you celebrate. Happy weekend to those of you who've been working hard all week. Hopefully you are ready for an hour, about 58 minutes at least, of uncensored news and underground music. We've got two brand new songs we're going to be playing today, Micah. For those who are into the music side of the show, we'll be playing a song, Echo Afro, in both Houston, so just, and of course we will be getting into the aforementioned uncensored news, local news starting in Houston, talking nationally, internationally, things that you might not hear anywhere else, and maybe not even on KPFT. So if you do support what we do, you can go to thehoustonfreethinkers.com, get our archives. We're on Spotify, Micah, as you know. We're on Odyssey, Rockfin. If you search Freethinker Radio, search thehoustonfreethinkers.com, you'll find us, find our content. And, of course, we broadcast on 90.1 KPFT in Houston, kpft.org. Go over there, show them support if you'd like to support Houston's only community radio station. All right, man. Where do you want to start?
Well, I'm glad to be back. I was out last week. Y'all were on FM. Sound good? I wanted to say that for sure after stumbling over that little bit of an intro. I'd like to... I guess we'll start with Houston, you know. I mean, there's been things going on. Some of these things are a lot worse to talk about than others. And some of them are just almost comical, like this one here where we have a former captain that's indicted and accused of pointing a gun at someone during a bogus voter fraud conspiracy theory. He runs his car into the people and thinks the guy has been carrying around fake ballots, but he was really just an AC repairman. I had to read that story a couple of times to try to find out if anything was going on, but apparently that's what they say was going on. Who knows if it turns into something more, but he's been indicted. So that's one that I noticed here in Houston. I also noticed that you got another officer member, former member of the HPDs, that's charged with aggravated assault. He breaks into his I don't know if they were married or they were separated or what, but she did not want him in. He kicked in the door of the dwelling and proceeded to, the accusation is, hit her with his closed fist multiple times in front of their one-year-old and then put a gun next to her head. Later, he showed her, an article about people who were killed by their spouse, and she said, "What are you trying to tell me?" So that was it. This is a 12-year member of the HPDs, and I guess the reason we have to talk about these things is quite often, you know, it's something like the Tuttles or something. Other times it's something like this, and people tend to think domestic violence as if it's anything other than violence, right? I think the main point here is we'd like to believe that every member or every person who professes to have authority over us has some sort of reason to have it. But quite often there's some really whacked out people with authoritarian complexes or something. And it seems like every week in the news, we've got it. And I'm sure all our listeners, you know, around the world in Melbourne and Denver, they have similar stories. But that's what's been going on in Houston. And it turns out another thing that's, you know, epidemic we've been talking about for a while, the opioid crisis, Derek. Turns out that there were arrests made in cases of doctors here who were giving out prescriptions with over 4 million opioid pills that basically had no medical use, is what they were saying. So basically giving them out for recreational use or selling them for profit. Over 4 million opioid pills. So, you know, in the middle of a crisis. So I don't know. What do you think about just that whirlwind of Houston?
Well, I think the last one here, I'll start with there, is a really important story because it's been, it's not just a Houston story, as you know. It really is. I mean, we're talking about pandemics, right, and epidemics. Well, there's a real epidemic of opioid deaths that have been going on in the United States for a number of years. And you can really track the growth of the opioid crisis with the increase of pharmaceuticals being pushed on the American public. I mean, I know that in my 37 years of being here on this planet, things did not seem to be this predominantly, not only funded, we know the media and other areas by pharmaceutical companies, but there are companies like the Sackler family that have become billionaires from funding these pills and contributing to the opioid crisis. Not even like when you're talking about heroin, illegal drugs, but you know, as in this case, legal drugs being given by corrupt doctors and people who are benefiting or getting paid on the side or whatever case may be. So, yeah, I think that it's definitely a big aspect, something to really pay attention to. And that's interesting to see that there's a Houston case there. So three Houston area pharmacists, right? I mean, and maybe there's more that just around. I'm sure there are corrupt people, obviously, as we know, in every industry. But that one's a big one to me. I definitely know plenty of people. I mean, we both know mutual friends who've died from opiates and drugs and things of that sort. And it's definitely not always people doing illegal drugs. Sometimes it's people who got a prescription and they kill themselves with these legal drugs.
Definitely. It's a dangerous thing. And obviously drugs can do a lot to help people, but they can also do a lot of damage. And it's interesting how people do tend to look the other way and quit and don't think of there being a problem when it comes to what might be a prescription or explained away in that manner. But yeah, we do have a crisis. And I think it's important that if we care about people that we find ways to talk to them about this, because if we don't talk to them about this, I feel like a lot of people just abandon people because of, you know, use of opioids, for lack of a better thing. And in such instances, that person doesn't have really anything except the opioid. So, you know, it is an epidemic. And, you know, if we're going to be worried about COVID, we saw how fentanyl outpaced COVID. I think we need to have just as much health concern and brotherly concern, whatever you want to say, for our fellow people out there going. There's so many assaults on us, and this is just another one. And I hope we can do something to take care of it. I mean, I obviously don't think we need the government to tell us not to go get scripts when we need them. But at the same time, obviously there's abuse. What do you think about that, Derek? How do you reconcile that? You know, we don't want an authority to, you know, perpetuate a war on the drugs, but at the same time, we can sit here and bemoan the opioid crisis and honestly want help in that front.
Well, I'll say this. Well, first thing is to the audience, everybody who's listening to this, whether live or recording later, feel free to comment or go to the HoustonFreethinkers.com and send us your comment. We'll air it on the next show. Have you, as a listener to this show, whether in Houston or anywhere else in the world, been affected by the opioid crisis? Or do you know somebody, you know, somebody in your family become addicted or maybe even lost their life or friends and, you know, things of that? I'm just curious because I know it is truly, maybe there's more people who know people have been affected by COVID than people who, people who've been affected by the opioid crisis than by COVID. I think that would be interesting. But yeah, I just want to go ahead and think about that, audience, anybody listening. And in the regards to the question of how to think about crises like the opioid crisis or that epidemic without necessarily calling for a new generation of the drug war or something like that, right? Which is just more government funding of the government via involuntary taxation and more boots on the ground, jackboots, thugs, cops having more power. Like that's all it would lead to: growing the DEA, growing ICE, these kinds of things, violating people's rights. So I don't support that at all. I do support programs that are you hear about, like harm reduction programs, for example. Like one of the ways I've seen this is you go to sometimes music festivals and they know people there are going to be using drugs. And rather than trying to pretend they're not going to be, they don't endorse or condone or really even promote it. But they do have these, there's different organizations, but some of them, they give out free drug test kits, for example. So users can test their drugs to make sure they know what they're getting. Because one thing that we know, friends of the show even who've lost family members because of individuals trying to take one drug, maybe have a party weekend, and they end up taking an opioid like fentanyl, which is extremely powerful, and then dying. So people can test their drugs. That's one way to reduce harm. Another way, and kind of in that same vein, I've seen where these festivals will set up areas for people who may be tripping or, you know, going out of their mind for a little bit to come safely relax and be in a safe space while they're taken care of and kind of figure themselves out. There's also things like needle exchange programs that people are very much against, or some people are very much against. But again, it's the idea that you know people are going to use, and rather than trying to criminalize that, which makes people have to go hide in alleys and in, you know, crappy apartments where there's drugs all around and things like that, in unsafe and unsanitary situations, you try to talk to people, you know, connect with them, reduce harm when possible. But if you know they're going to use, make sure they have a safe way to do that while at the same time being open. And we've seen this, I think it's Portugal that's decriminalized drugs 15 years now plus, and they've had plenty of evidence showing that these types of programs don't lead to more addicts, don't lead to more crime, as people were saying they would. In fact, they lead to people getting the help whenever they, you know, they decide, they realize like, okay, I'm not going to be treated like a criminal. Maybe I do need to go get help, and the help's there for them to offer. So yeah, long-winded answer, but I think things like that are part of the answer.
I think you're right, and I'm glad we kind of went a little deeper. It seems like we got a lot of responses here worth maybe taking a moment to even mention, because this is a large discussion, bigger than this show, and it needs to be had, in families and in communities around the country to find, you know, ways, because it does seem like these sort of solutions. I saw one here about purpose. I don't know who said that, but it, you know, tried to address maybe a more fundamental problem than the actual just use, like what is that symptomatic of, perhaps. I thought that was an interesting comment, the person who said it was a, you know, question of purpose. So I've heard also recently, read, I don't have them at hand, but where they have opened clinics where, you know, you could go and use these, I guess you could call them hard drugs, right? Crack or heroin or whatever in this environment. And that in the long run, most people wanted to get off of it. Almost everybody in the programs that was going there wanted to get off of these things. And with the help of somebody was able to, you know, at least diminish use, do these things. And they had all these positive stories. And I don't know that that's always the case, but obviously, you know, more homework to be done on many fronts here. When people are dying, it's pretty serious. And like we saw, and I'm sure Johnny talked about a couple of times back, and I saw a new article talking about, you know, the number of deaths and how severe it is with fentanyl, and even the amount of fentanyl that has been seized and how many people it could kill. It's kind of alarming. And I think a lot of people's knee jerk reaction is, you know, we need some authority to clean this up or something, make me safe from it.
Yeah, no, they're not going to make anything better. Yeah, we appreciate all the comments. I did get one over on DLive from our old friend Rika. She said, my husband's childhood friend as an adult died of a heroin overdose. We've got other people saying, you know, fentanyl is a serious issue. It needs attention. And you, like you said, someone, Timothy Appleseed, saying two of the biggest reasons for drug abuse stem from a lack of sense of purpose and belonging. And one of our listeners says she's heard of the Middle Georgia Harm Reduction Coalition, which sounds like they're working on some of those ideas. So we appreciate everybody chiming in. We're going to continue, go forward with some show, some more stories. We got one more Houston one, and then a whole batch of COVID-related news as we approach Christmas. And many of you probably have heard, whether Houston or really anywhere at this time, that you might want to rethink the holidays. Maybe check if your guests have been vaccinated or not, because Omicron, which we're being told spreads much faster, but is not strong in the sense of weakening people. And we still have people asking for isolation of COVID. We have people who saying they don't trust the PCR test. They have people who say, I'll take my, you know, my chances with this one because I've got sick already. Lots of different discussions, but from the top down, as we're going to discuss in a couple moments, from the White House on down and in other nations, they're trying to still enforce lockdowns, mandates. It seems like the masks are coming back now. I've seen Boston, you know, we're gonna get into all of it, so stay tuned. But I want to start locally in Houston. And Micah, tell me if you've heard this story. I just came across this morning. Public officials and media reported that an unvaccinated man in Texas became the first American to die from the Omicron variant. Journalist Dan Cohen called the Harris County Public Health Department to verify the report, and it turns out it's not true. And we're going to play the audio of the phone call in just a moment. And this is interesting, though. This is the Houston connection. The first person to wrongly claim that the man had died from the Omicron variant was the county's chief executive, Judge Lena Hidalgo. While she was correct, the article says, will she correct the record or let this misinformation stand? Why don't any of the news outlets that echoed her incorrect statement bother to check with the Harris County Public Health Department? So I'm going to show on screen what they're talking about. What did Lena Hidalgo say? This was just 2 days, December 20th. Judge Lena Hidalgo on Twitter, sad to report the first local fatality from the Omicron variant of COVID-19, a man in his 50s from the eastern portion of Harris County who is not vaccinated. Please get vaccinated and boosted. So claiming that he died from the Omicron, first person in Houston area in Harris County, first person maybe even in Texas. So here's the clip I'm going to play again. This is journalist Dan Cohen, who just decided to go do his homework and actually call the Harris County Public Department of Health to get some information. So we'll just play this clip and then comment.
We've just confirmed the first death in the United States due to the Omicron variant in Texas.
On Monday, Texas reported the country's first known Omicron death, a man in his 50s who was not vaccinated.
We can't confirm that the patient died from COVID, but we can say that he was Omicron positive at the time of his death.
So he died with COVID, but you can't say that he died from COVID.
Correct. This information comes from our epidemiologists, who are the ones who get the reports. They have to do a very meticulous investigation because, you know, they do take this very much at heart. They're telling me that they cannot say that that COVID was the absolute cause of death.
All right. So again, that was journalist Dan Cohen calling in to the Harris County Department of Health. And I want to make sure to state the woman's name. The voice you heard there was Martha Marquez from Harris County Public Health. And again, Dan asking her, you know, if the first question was about, did he die from COVID? And she said, well, we can say that he was Omicron positive at the time of his death, but we can't say he died from COVID. And he clarified and said, so you're mean he died with COVID, but you can't say that he died from COVID. And she said, yes, that's what their epidemiologists are saying there. So yeah, what do you think about that, Mike? I mean, again, I'm curious if they correct the record at all.
It sounds familiar. Yeah, the whole like they died with it.
Yeah.
Imagine all I've heard in other stories was like a man in Texas was the first American case, but that only here recently. I didn't realize that was all tied back to Lena Hidalgo. You'll have to forgive me. I was actually enjoying life for the last week and not paying attention to some of this stuff. And I know it's kind of wrong, but it felt so good. But yeah, you're right. You know,
no, it is good. You know,
I bet you not retracted.
I'm glad you mentioned that though, Mike. I just want to say that real quick, because I mean, I think that is an important point. I even kind of posted something like this on social media recently saying, you know, with everything going on in the world, sometimes I feel bad when I'm out here enjoying myself. Like I'll have a moment of thinking like, wait, man, I'm doing these amazing things. I'm feeling like I'm having a good time in my life and things are going well. And there is a lot of craziness going on. Like, is that okay? Is that right? You know, but I think we have to be able to find those moments. So, you know, we have to find those moments. And we also have to, I think, for me at least, it's important to try to dissect and expose and debunk some of this stuff when it comes up, because I wonder how many other Houston radio stations and news outlets have repeated that claim, but are either haven't heard this call we just played or are choosing not to report on the follow-up, you know, and will Lena Hidalgo follow-up? I don't know. I really wish I was in Houston right now so I could attend some press conferences and, you know, try to ask this question. But I feel like our audience on KPFT, Freethinker Radio, everywhere else deserves to hear that story.
Well, one of the things we got to be careful about is when we talk to the CDC or the Harris County Health Department, we are, we're asking some serious questions that it's hard to answer without being an expert in a lot of ways, like what was the cause of death, okay? Now, when Lena Hidalgo is making her tweet, she's speaking rhetorically and as a politician to a certain degree, right? He died with it. I'm sorry to report the first case of a death with it. You see what I'm saying? She's not saying the same thing as a cause, but I think politicians, especially ones who are ready to jump like that, have really demonstrated their stripes over the last 2 years. And I imagine many, many communities have a similar, you know, politician. And it's just curious. Okay, let's see. The first
she said
the Omicron. Yeah, so she said, that does sound like a causal claim, doesn't it? I mean, that's what it all hinges on. Is she making the causal claim? And yeah, I think when she says from that she is. So will she, you know, will she get in line with the science?
Follow the science, right? Well, thanks for entertaining that for a moment, Micah. I hope anybody who hasn't seen that does look into it, especially if you live in Houston. If you happen to catch up with Lena Hidalgo or the mayor or Dr. David Peirce or Dr. Peter Hotez or any of the, you know, health authorities in the city of Houston and Harris County, you know, maybe consider asking them about that. I'm going to jump forward, though. We're going to play a new song in just a few minutes, but I do want to mention a story. It's Christmas, Micah. It's holidays, whatever you celebrate. It's Saturnalia, you know, whatever you want to celebrate out there. It's that time of year. And Julian Assange is still spending his days and his nights in prison. And, you know, and I don't know if we actually covered this already, but I wanted to mention it just in case we hadn't, for those who hadn't heard. And again, to make sure that there is maybe a different perspective shared on KPFT. Those who haven't heard, Julian Assange lost his appeal to the British High Court. And they accepted the U.S. request to extradite him to the United States for trial. Julian Assange is not a U.S. citizen, has never been to the United States, and is now more than likely going to be extradited. And this was something that the Biden administration was continuing from the Trump administration of trying to prosecute him and go after him. And Glenn Greenwald did a pretty good write-up about this, just going through the... Say that again.
Same. Trump, Biden, yeah. Same.
Trump, Biden, same, Obama, Bush, what? Yeah, and you know, they go through some of the details, but all of that's really important to know is that, look, the judge basically said that they can extradite him. His team had been trying to fight it because they're expecting him to go to this prison in Colorado, which has been called like the Guantanamo of the U.S. at certain times. It's a supermax prison in Florence, Colorado, and some groups have already said that it should be illegally open, and that it should be condemned based on human rights violations here in the U.S. And more than likely, Assange is expected to go to be in solitary confinement. And he's already, I think, since this time had some psychological issues and really not been doing well. So, I mean, that's one update that people hear that story, right? But I do know a good amount of the people who hear that story, especially I'm going to wager a guess, those who might listen to KPFT regularly, they might have only heard things from MSNBC or CNN or wherever, even Fox News, claiming that Julian Assange was involved in hacking or that he endangered Americans, and just these different talking points that have been going on since the Bush administration but have been debunked. You know, it's never been shown in any concrete way that anything Julian Assange himself or WikiLeaks themselves did put people in danger, despite them trying to claim that. They've never been able to prove that. And a lot of people who supported WikiLeaks and Julian Assange during the Obama years seemed to turn their back whenever Hillary Clinton was exposed by WikiLeaks, and you know, showing how just the corruption within the DNC, and that led to a lot of people resigning. I mean, there's so much, right? And that has led to this intense prosecution and persecution of him. So another thing I wanted to just mention for a moment here, Julian Assange has, I mean, excuse me, Glenn Greenwald has this clip, the real disinformation agents watch as NBC News tells four blatant lies in this 2-minute clip. And it might be worth playing a little bit of it, but it's probably a little too long for the show. We're already pressed for time, but I will include this link, of course, at thehoustonfreethinkers.com, or you can just search that, the real disinformation agents in Glenn Greenwald. And he shows this 2-minute clip from NBC just outright lying about Assange, and then easily, you know, goes through and debunks the claims they make. But it's just the kind of stuff that's on corporate media, that's on TV. There are people who are uninformed hearing those things and probably repeating them, or at least believing them and storing them in their mind. And okay, this is what's happening. Who cares about that guy? When really, whatever you think about Julian Assange, whether you think he's a plant, whether you think he's Russian info, whether you think he's a psyop or whatever, it's not good for civil liberties and for journalistic freedoms for this to be happening.
That's for sure. It's kind of interesting that there is such a silence about it. There'll be outcry about all kinds of things, and there's not really much. It's not occupying a lot of space in the media. Wonder why. Isn't that kind of the problem that the whole WikiLeaks reveals? I mean, who's doing the research? Who's calling the Harris County help department, who's doing the real connect the dots? I mean, the person who, like the hypothetical person that you mentioned who, you know, scratches Julian off after hearing that and calls him an other and says his human rights don't matter or neither do, you know, neither does getting the truth out in a democracy or, you know, in a, whatever you want to use, like a civil society or in a open society or whatever you might use. There's so many terms that really don't mean what they should anymore. So I don't know.
I agree with that. Yeah.
It all on its head.
The silence is the big problem, man. I mean, the silence is the big problem. And that's why here at Freethinker Radio, we at least want to, like I said, regardless of your opinion of him, it is something that we should all be concerned about, the circumstances, the outcome, the precedent that it sets. It's something that is important to us here on Freethinker Radio because, Micah, we've been doing the show now over 10 years. And I remember when we were starting in summer of 2011, the things that WikiLeaks were doing in 2011, 2012, 2013, the revelations by Bradley Manning, now Chelsea Manning, those were huge. And they, you know, the Afghan war logs, the Iraq war logs, the collateral murder video showing the U.S. military firing on unarmed journalists indiscriminately and just kind of laughing it off. Like, these are real revelations.
Yeah, it just, you know, it shocks me now the number of people that were just like, hey, question, you know, when Colin Powell was up there talking about the weapons of mass destruction and, you know, people were decrying Bush and everything, you know, and now everybody's like, oh, don't question, you know, don't question. It's like, what happened? I'm kind of shocked. It's probably kind of like maybe they're like the people who were still being like, oh, you're unpatriotic if you question George Bush, you know. Don't listen to Dixie Chicks anymore.
Yeah, I remember that. Well,
I got one thing I'd like to say in this little break real quick, man.
Yeah.
You know, the New York Times, I think they cost like $3 a day, and the Wall Street Journal costs like $5 a day. And think about all the people supporting those outlets. You know, KPFT gives an opportunity not just to Freethinker Radio, but a whole bunch of other ideas and Houston music and music from beyond and from different times, just all kinds of stuff, both here on the FM and on HD. And we're glad to be broadcast FM 5 p.m. hour. You know, if you think we're as valuable as New York Times or Wall Street Journal or just KPFT in general is, we appreciate if you'd step up during these times and make that pledge to KPFT in the name of Freethinker Radio. We don't often shout it out, but we are on a listener-supported FM station. It's very near and dear to our heart. So, like I said, whatever you can do, anything helps in the name of Freethinker Radio. Thank you. I'm sure Derek feels the same way.
Yep, absolutely. And I just want to put another question to the audience. Do you support Julian Assange? Your thoughts, you know, about him? I know we've got a couple other Debbie saying, I totally support Julian Assange over here on DLive. We got Immortal AI saying, you guys are the only ones talking about Assange. So we appreciate that. I'm going to go now to our last story for this first half of the show before we jump into our music. We'll probably play Velveteen Echo first because I've never heard it, so I'm interested to hear that. But I got one brief just 5G update that I wanted to share that, again, you might not hear discussed too heavily in the mainstream. It's out there, but it's not being dissected. Some folks might not be aware that there are people opposing 5G, and it's not just on health concerns or environmental concerns or privacy concerns, although those do exist. But there are also people within the aviation industry who've been speaking out against 5G, concerned that the 5G C-band, which is what it's called, the C-band, the deployment of that band of wireless band will disrupt flights and navigation and things of that sort. So this was the first aspect reported in early November. Aviation industry seeks longer delay on C-band deployment. So it says that aviation organizations sent a letter to the White House in early November calling for a delay in the deployment of C-band until, quote, the safety and the efficiency of the national airspace system is ensured. And last week, AT&T and Verizon agreed to delay their long-awaited launch of C-band spectrum until January 5th, 2022. And the delay is a blow to the carriers who have been promoting 5G for a couple of years now. The FAA and the FCC said the reason to pause is to, quote, further assess any impact on aviation safety technologies. And so it goes on here to say that in a letter to the National Economic Council, the Coalition of Aviation Groups urged the FAA and the FAA and the FCC to convene a joint industry working group to bring the aviation and telecom industries together to find a long-term solution that will, quote, protect the flying public by ensuring radio altimeters operate accurately while allowing 5G to roll out safely. So that's the first kind of aspect of that. And again, maybe some people don't even realize or hadn't even heard that these kinds of concerns are happening. But we do have an update from just the last week or so here. And this one, again, it's kind of interesting. We have new FAA rule. FAA issues new rule, aircraft restrictions linked to 5G technology and warns of possible flight diversions. This was reported just December 8th. The FAA announced a new rule on Tuesday, December 8th, that forbids pilots from using auto landing and other certain flight systems at low altitudes where 5G wireless signals could interfere with onboard instruments that measure a plane's distance to the ground. The rule, which affects more than 6,800 U.S. airplanes and dozens of aircraft manufacturers, could lead to disruptions in some flight routes involving low visibility conditions where pilots typically must rely on these equipment known as radio altimeters to land safely. And they're saying the potential risk is that 5G signals could lead to faulty readings that make flying unsafe in these conditions. And as we mentioned, they had passed a rule. So aviation industry is kind of pushing against it. FAA delays a rule. And then one final piece of this, and then I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Micah. This is Boeing and Airbus now, two companies, want the Biden administration to delay the rollout of 5G cell service, citing safety concerns. And so this is the latest development just happening, you know, within a day of this recording. Boeing CEO David Calhoun and Airbus America CEO Jeffrey Nittel sent a letter to Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg to say the January 5th rollout of 5G could cause interference that could, quote, adversely affect the ability of aircraft to safely operate. So CEOs now coming out themselves and asking the Biden administration to delay it. So for those who oppose 5G for whatever reasons, kind of a win in their department. And again, like I said, kind of, I think, a reality check of just how these different new technologies in this interconnected world we're moving into, the Internet of Things and all that, that there, it might not be that simple, you know?
Definitely. My mind goes a lot of strange places here. For one, I think it's a question of like, okay, so you got this way of measuring your aircraft's distance from the ground, radar or radio altimeters, okay? Then, you know, it's been a long time since most of those airline pilots haven't used those devices and haven't used auto landing as a whole. I'm sure I'm not trying to say all of them don't know how or anything like that or didn't do it in school or whatever, but you get the point. I imagine they use those systems like your average American drives an automatic transmission just about nowadays, you know? And so I get these questions that come to my mind. Okay, independent of any ideas about flying or 5G, which technology, which know-how has a right to tell the other technology you can't be spawned, you can't be created, you know? Okay, so you've got people flying around in the airlines dependent on radio altimeter and that auto flight technology. Then you've got the capacity that 5G promises or whatever. Right. So who do we decide to limit here? And who makes those decisions? And how could even the market, what would they have? Does the airline have to find another solution? Or when the first crash happens, do they go after the 5G champions? You see what I mean? Whose fault is that crash? Is it the airlines for not knowing how to fly in a 5G environment? Or is it the 5G for throwing a hockey puck in, you know? It's who's to say who can control it? Like, they're creating 5G. You're trying to create a peaceful environment. They're trying to fly jets. Whose will has the ability to say what can be done? So, you know, that's where I go, first of all. Within, of course, then we got to think about practicality and safety.
Yeah, well, I think whose vision is going to win out. At the moment, it seems like Big Wireless's vision of jamming 5G and 6G down people's throats, despite concerns like this. You know, they've tried to label, and including the New York Times and a lot of mainstream press, has tried to make anybody questioning 5G appear as a nut job. You know, whether that's for health reasons, environmental, privacy, or even this, it's just like, oh, come on, 5G, everybody knows it's all good. Well, we're going to go to a song real quick, guys. We'll get back in just a couple of minutes. We have some more COVID news to bring to you, the latest updates and court cases and new rollouts of vaccines, and Boston's now requiring vaccine passports. And oh my God, it's a lot, but we'll get into it after this music break. We're going to play one of Houston's up and coming bands called Velveteen Echo. So check this out. We'll be right back here on Freethinker Radio. All right. Welcome back to Freethinker Radio. What do you think about that, Micah? That was my first time.
I like that. That was good. I can see why they're, you know, receiving, you know, such attention. You know, they're relatively new, and it's good to enjoy that music. I want to hear more from them. I'm going to have to go check them out. And I have to admit that, you know, lately we haven't been bringing as much new music as we used to, and we look forward to continuing that. One of the reasons is we went from a 2-hour show to a 1-hour show, and we had to squeeze in all these ideas and also try to keep up with new music during, you know, the shutdown. So yes, if you know musicians and have good music, send that stuff to us any way you can reach us, because we want to keep discovering and sharing it. That to me has always been a favorite part of the show, because in the face of all this stuff, it's like what we're talking about, you know, of getting away, of also the, you know, the ability of art and creativity in the face of division and destruction. So, you know, it's a big part of the show and always will be. Maybe if y'all like help us out at KPFT, they'll put us on for 2 hours, who knows.
Yeah, well, let's go ahead, Micah. I know we got about 20 minutes or just a little less to get into some important stories.
Can we talk about the scary stuff that the White House said?
Yeah, we're going to get right into that. I just want to introduce to that, just let people know, because I have a feeling, again, because people in Texas or maybe paranoia, the holiday fear. I wanted to just make it clear, these plans are kind of continuing forward, and this Omicron variant, as they are calling it, is not making anything easier. Boston just this week announced a new system called Be Together. It's Boston's vaccine requirement for certain indoor spaces. Let's stay healthy and connected. Starting January 15, 2022, individuals will be required to show proof of vaccination against COVID in order to enter certain indoor spaces in Boston. This is for people 12 and up. And so this is just a brand new program. And it specifically says those going inside restaurants, bars, nightclubs, movie theaters, fitness centers, concerts, sports arenas, museums, and other entertainment facilities must show proof of a COVID vaccine passport, such as a vaccine card, digital image of a vaccine card, or another vaccination record, as well as presenting a verification app. Businesses will be forced to post a notice for the COVID-19 vax requirement to enter, and the mandate applies to anyone 12 or older. So Boston now succumbing to these kinds of things. I got one more, and then I'll hear your thoughts, Mike, and we'll jump into the White House. Chicago. I don't know if it should be a surprise. Chicago, major city. Mayor Lightfoot announces new Chicago COVID restrictions, proof of vaccine, and testing for indoors. The city of Chicago is imposing a wide-ranging vaccine mandate that affects bars, restaurants, gyms, and more after the first of the year. And they announced these just this Tuesday. And they said, quote, chances are everyone knows someone with COVID-19 right now. It's everywhere. This new mandate applies to anyone 5 or older who is eligible to get vaccinated and takes place on January 3rd and is likely to remain in effect for several months. That's what they're willing to admit. So anyone 5 or older who wants to go to the gym, bar, restaurants, or other indoor arenas now must show proof of vaccination. And that means going out to eat in Chicago will require people not just to bring their mask, but also proof of vaccination if they're going to be inside for more than 10 minutes. And
that's pretty intense, you know. And I think some people might be surprised, you know, Boston, the shot that was heard around the world, the Boston Massacre and all that stuff. And now it's like, oh, you can't go anywhere or do anything unless you can papers, please. I don't know, you know, and they kind of act like it's just going to go away eventually. Like you could just hide out in your hut for, you know, a few years. And then it'll eventually everything will be back to normal and you can go out, as if you could trust that. So I don't know. I don't know that we should just all be okay with this. And I guess, you know, there's been so much of a sit back and watch the numbers. But, you know, more people are dying of fentanyl.
Yeah, well, that's what's happening, right? They're out there telling people, and I don't think this is a surprise. I think this might be a trend for going into the new year. Lockdowns coming back. Holiday message from the White House, Micah. Tell us all about this. What's the White House out there saying to
people who definitely chosen, you know,
to not get the shot?
Yeah, for sure, Derek. I think it's kind of, you know, part of that whole fear campaign. We were talking about earlier. It turns out that the White House chief coordinator for the U.S. coronavirus response has a strong warning for unvaccinated Americans. And it's hard to even know what that phrase even means anymore. Does that mean you didn't get the boost? Does that mean you didn't get the second jab? Does that mean you didn't get any jabs? Anyway, whatever they mean by unvaccinated nowadays, the strong warning for unvaccinated Americans ahead of a projected surge in cases over the next few weeks. And he says, and here's the part I want to know what people think about this. Is it just something you'd expect them to say, or does it sound like they're trying to, you know, just ramp it up a little bit? He says, if you're vaccinated, quote, we've done the right thing. We've done the right thing, and we will get through this. This is what the COVID coordinator, Jeff Zients, said, and it sounds like he's speaking, you know, to the inner circle there. We will. But moving forward, he says, for the unvaccinated, you're looking at a winter of severe illness and death for yourselves, your families, and the hospitals you may soon overwhelm. I want to know, do y'all think he's trying to, you know, cast some kind of ominous stuff on you? Or do you think, you know, it's just a matter of course? Or do you think they're just trying to do what they were doing last year and make you not go visit anybody at Christmas? I don't know. It sounds kind of dark. But yeah, it turns out that, you know, that's something they spoke about just last Friday. The optimum protection, he says, is to be fully vaccinated plus a boost. So yeah. So the bottom line of what we've been telling you all along, they're trying to, you know, just keep hitting that line, get vaccinated. And this time they're saying, or you're going to be severely ill and die. So I don't know. What do you think about that, Derek?
Well, I did see that report pop up, and I thought it was interesting. I actually just, while you were talking, I just did a quick Google search dark winter, because like you said that phrase a moment ago, right? And that was the phrase that we saw used all of last year. You know, it has a whole history to it that we've talked about previously. But just by doing a quick search, 12 hours ago, the Daily Voice says, a dark winter. Maryland reports high record number of winter's wisdom in the heart of darkness. It says, last year's COVID dark winter has become this year's winter of death. That's, you know, the Biden statement. And I saw one just a moment ago. Let me pull it up. Omicron scare, U.S. staring at a dark winter. So, I mean, it's interesting that just the terminology that's being used again. I personally believe, and not just me, not just Derek Rose, the opinion, but from the doctors and scientists that I've been following and listening to are saying, like, whatever this is, it's spreading more rapidly, but it's not affecting people. And this could be, in some people's terms, the end of the pandemic, because it's spreading to the point where people are getting it but not getting sick for the most part, right? And so that's just kind of my initial thoughts on that. And I don't know if it helps for the White House to put it in those sorts of terms as far as, you know, you're facing death and this and that. But I guess in their eyes, they feel these darn stubborn people just won't give in, and we have to scare them, I guess. But the next story I'd like you to get into, Michael, while we're getting into these, is the Supreme Court aspect of this, right? Because we've got the Biden mandates. There's been the 100, if you have more than 100 employees, you got to get the shots. There's been the healthcare mandates. And as we talked about, I think I talked about with Johnny last week, there's different lawsuits going on, and some of them have been halted. Some of them are going forward. But what's the situation with the Supreme Court?
Yeah, for sure. Let's get into it a little bit. It's got a little background, so let me go. A raft of cases all challenging various efforts by the Biden administration to encourage vaccination and control the spread of COVID-19 reached the Supreme Court at once this month. And the Supreme Court announced Wednesday evening that it will hear oral arguments in these cases on January 7th. So when we get back from the break, an unusually rapid schedule, which suggests that the court plans to resolve the cases quickly. I wonder, you know, how that stands. The first bucket of cases involves an emergency rule, and this one's really, I think, really interesting. An emergency rule promulgated by the Federal Occupation Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, which provides that most employers must either require that their employees be vaccinated or take certain steps to mitigate the spread of COVID-19. These are the things where you hear that, you know, 100 or more employees must be vaccinated if you have 100 or more. Think about it, OSHA, what are they going to do? They're going to start demanding this stuff of your private employer. I guess, you know, they've gotten to where they'll demand anything of your employer, and most of the time they'll just give it to them. Shortly after this new rule took effect, a panel of the United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit raced to hand down an order blocking it. But that case was eventually transferred to the Sixth Circuit, and a more centrist panel of the Sixth Circuit judges reinstated the rule. That means, for the moment, the OSHA rule is in effect. But that could change once a Supreme Court dominated by Republican appointees gets its hands on it. So, you know, they're telling us that this is nothing but partisan politics in a way, at least this article.
Can I say one thing real quick, Micah? Yes. I think that part you mentioned there just a second ago about they seem to be in a rush. It said an unusually rapid schedule, which suggests the court plans to resolve the cases quickly. I just want to say that if it's any indication with how they handled the cases here in Houston, the case that Jennifer Bridges, who we previously interviewed, the nurse who was fired in Houston Methodist for not taking the shot, who took her case all the way up to the Supreme Court or the federal court, and they did the similar thing. They put it on the docket very quickly just to kick it out and say, nope, this thing's failed. And I'd be concerned that a similar thing might happen.
I think you've got a very good point, because historically the wheels of justice don't move. How are they thought to move? The wheels of justice move, there's a word, slow. You know, think about how long it's ever taken you to do anything, you know, in the justice system. Look at how long lawyers draw things out for. It is an oddity that things be hurried up, you know, fast-tracked, whatever you want to call it. I agree with you. It's as if it's something special that we have to hurry up and do. But these are crucial decisions if you think about it. I mean, the federal government in some ways, many might say, are pushing themselves into private employers' business and making undue demands from a private employer upon a private citizen. You know what I'm saying? So I do think a lot of people could be pressuring various judges, and I would hope other people as well. Let's go a little bit further in this, because obviously this is a area of, you know, of concern here with COVID. Sorry for the delay. I had to try to make my computer work, but yeah, things are just bogging down on me. I'm sorry, Derek.
Well, I could pick it up right there, Mike. I'll mention the second case that says a second round of cases involves a rule promulgated by the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which required nearly all healthcare workers to be vaccinated in order to protect their patients. This includes the overwhelming majority of nursing home workers who interact with older residents. And so it says it's going into the arguments that the rule exceeds the agency's authority. The legal arguments they claim for the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services are much stronger. And so they got Jonathan Adler, who is a conservative law professor, says, quote, the CMS rule can be justified as a measure to protect Medicare and Medicaid recipients, which is something CMS clearly has the authority to do. Nevertheless, the lower courts are split on whether to uphold the rule. So that's basically saying, like, if you want to get Medicaid, Medicare, then you got to have the jab. And they believe the government has more authority in that area. I don't know if I would agree that. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I see why they're saying that. But, at the end of the day, there's always like the whole morality of the thing. And then let's go back to the fundamental law that is the Constitution. Like, all this stuff is stepping all over it. So it's hard to know what a judge will say. But I'd like to get back into it a little bit myself, because my machine actually caught up. And I'm glad you talked about the CMS case, because they're talking. Okay, they go on to say that both of these cases turn on the power of federal agencies to issue binding regulations pursuant to their existing statutory authority. And the same justices who zealously protected religious conservatives also believe that restricting the power of federal agencies is a high priority. The Conservative Federalist Society, which played a significant role in placing many of the justices on the bench, has pushed for greater restrictions on federal agencies since the Obama administration. But the vaccine cases throw the potential costs of the crusade against federal agencies into stark relief. Vaccine mandates are one of the most effective tools, supposedly, to encourage vaccination, if that's your goal, right? And about 28% of American adults remain unvaccinated. And I've seen numbers higher than that. So I'm not sure what the real number is. CMS estimates that its rule will save hundreds or even thousands of lives a month. OSHA estimates that its rule will save over 6,500 workers' lives and prevent over 250,000 hospitalizations. And it's kind of the same thing as, trying to you know, with the airlines. If we can't do this, people are going to die. The Fifth and Sixth Circuit decisions concerning the OSHA rules are a microcosm of the larger ideological struggle going on within the judiciary. Often when multiple parties challenge a federal policy, their cases are litigated in different federal courts with different judges handing down competing interpretations of the law. The litigation over OSHA's workplace vaccination rule works somewhat differently. Lawsuits challenging the OSHA rule could be filed in any of the multiple federal circuit courts that typically handle appellate cases. But 10 days after the OSHA rule was announced, the federal statute requires the judiciary to conduct a lottery to determine which circuit court will hear all of these cases. In this case, the Sixth Circuit was selected in this lottery, which is the reason why a case was initially decided by the Fifth and got transferred. One upshot of this unusual process is that there was a brief period after a lawsuit called BST Holdings versus OSHA, which was filed in the Fifth, but before the lottery took place and the case was transferred to the Sixth, when an especially conservative Fifth Circuit panel had jurisdiction over the OSHA rule, and that panel raced to hand down a decision blocking the rule before the case could be taken away from them. The resulting opinion in the BST Holdings, written by Trump appointee Engelhardt, is riddled with errors, some of them obvious and egregious. So, you know, it's all, I guess the point is, you know, when it goes to the Supreme Court, the idea is that they're going to try to limit federal agencies' powers. Now, like all politics, is this in or out of your interest? It's the same thing as the 5G argument. Is it in or out of your interest? And so I think, you know, we can see whether the Supreme Court is going to prioritize legal documents, foundational legal documents, or if they're going to have an adaptive approach and, you know, argue that these agencies have been empowered by the Congress to do things for us, the people, and therefore everything's just fine with, you know, us having to accept the order from Alphabet Soup, CMS, OSHA, whoever, and, you know, comply.
My guess is the second one. Hopefully not that people will comply, but that they, you know, won't follow the Constitution as they haven't been for a long time, and the Constitution hasn't stopped them from doing that, and that will continue. We're down to just the last couple minutes here, guys. If you want to share any comments that you'd like us to read on air, please go ahead and get those in right now as we do start to wrap up. I wanted you to hit, Micah, one more while we wrap up here. I'm just going to mention one. We won't have time to get into it today, but I think if you're a reader and you want to check out something new, I encourage you to go check out this article at dailyveracity.com. I just found this recently, titled "The Shadowy CIA Data Firms Behind the Creation of Digital Vaccine Passport IDs." And it touches some of the work that Whitney Webb and some others have done, but it gets into some of the corporations and the people and the foundations funding these different pushes for vaccine passports, which we're seeing that are going along with the mandates. But yeah, Micah, we got like, I don't know, 1 or 2 minutes left here. If you want to say anything about this Secret Service pandemic relief funds being stolen, I thought that one was kind of interesting.
Oh yeah. I think it's just, you know, we're looking at a massive attempt to, you know, reallocate wealth and everything, build back better and bailouts and such. But meanwhile, they are saying, like, I guess $9 billion or so has been misappropriated, if not more, in various COVID relief. And now the Secret Service is actually looking into it. And they're typically, more like protect dignitaries and have something. And you know, they're an arm of the Treasury. So, yeah, I guess, you know.
Well, I thought it was interesting. They actually said it was $100 million. $100 billion. It says the Secret Service estimates that $100 billion has been stolen through the use of fraudulent COVID-19 relief applications. It's kind of crazy. Wow, that much money.
And think about it also. Now, so you had them working, giving out the relief, right? Getting paid to give out the relief. Then you had people getting the relief and some of them stealing it and others just stealing it legitimately, I guess. And now you've got them working, getting paid to get the thieves that they sort of gave an opportunity to, in a way, if you think.
Yeah. And I don't know, man. I mean, this is, maybe there's that many fraudulent cases going on, but it also, $100 billion is not some chump change. Like, you know, people will do frauding some old people out of a couple thousand dollars, $100 billion. That's a lot. So there's got to be some either huge kind of criminal currency, organized crime operations going on, or something else. But it says that the Secret Service is leading investigations in situations in which unsuspecting victims were used as money mules to move illicit funds around using cryptocurrency. The agency said they have seen a huge uptick in cases of suspects using electronic crime to carry out their fraud. I don't know if that's just a push to overall, like, the kind of criminalize the idea of digital currencies or cryptocurrencies, or, you know, people using private crypto, but it isn't. I just thought it was an interesting note.
They say they've got over 900 active criminal investigations into it, and that they've already recovered $2.3 billion. I guess they still got to find, you know, 97.7 billion dollars of it. So there's all kinds of things that are going on. I'm glad you caught that. It was 100 billion. I'm sitting here shifting through articles and going off memory there, but that's a tremendous number. And I guess as we're printing more and more of these numbers, and as we're going through 10-15% inflation, the worst we've seen, these numbers are starting to not seem so big. And I'm starting to think of 100 billion the way we used to think of maybe like a million or something.
Wow, it's so crazy. It's happening. Well, guys, look, we hope you enjoy your Christmas, your Saturnalia, your Kwanzaa, your Hanukkah, whatever you do, even if you're just hanging out with friends, wearing a Santa hat. If you have a good time, we're thankful for it. We will be back next week, the end of the year episode. We have one more episode in 2021. Well, maybe we can do like a review of some of the top stories we saw in 2021 or something like that, but we'll reflect a little bit. We're thankful for everybody listening. Remember, you can find us at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. And until next time. Peace
out. Sounds good. See y'all. Y'all have a good one. Thanks. Love you.
You're addicted to things that turn you on. Every little thing that you see through the filters on your phone. An aphrodisiac straight down to the bone. Sleeping alone has its benefits too. But I've been lied to, that scenic side view. A little teasing of what you might do. But every time you get close to me, me to the side. Why don't you make up your mind? She said, I bet you wanna be my lover. I bet you wanna get my number. I don't play games, I don't want flames. I would have you above your nine moves. Let's see inside you. A little teasing of what you might do. But you're addicted to things that turn you on. Every little thing that you see through the filters on your phone. An aphrodisiac straight down to the bone. Sleeping alone has its benefits too. Yeah. Every time you get close to me, you push me to the top priority. Tell me you can sleep. Text at 2 a.m. WYD Aphrodisiac. Aphrodisiac, baby. Show up to my place that you've been dreaming of my face. Oh well, I guess it's getting late. Sleep.
show, but I guess it's true.